Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. Spectators can find event info such as start times, race routes, and where to watch, as well as volunteer opportunities at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Neppe. Indigenous Peoples Day was first celebrated in 1989 in South Dakota. It has gradually been catching on around the country as an alternative to celebrating Columbus Day. A handful of Iowa towns declared the second Monday of October to be Indigenous Peoples Day in 2017. Governor Reynolds made a statewide declaration in 2018. And this year, many other communities in Iowa joined in. In a few minutes, I'll talk with two Indigenous Iowans about what Indigenous Peoples Day means to them. But first, we visited the Indigenous Peoples Day celebration on the campus of the University of Iowa.
Hi, my name is Paula Johnson. I'm from Alberta, Canada. I'm Samhsa Cree Nation, Muscogee's Cree. It's an honor to be here in Iowa, for me as a Cree woman, to be amongst other people who identify as being Native American, because that is a big honor to have, especially when it's been taken away from you for so many generations. My grandmother is a registered school survivor. She passed away in 2013, so everything I try and do in my life is to honor her. So because it was taken away from her, the abuse that she incurred. So it's an honor to be here amongst everyone else to take part in this day.
My name is Adrian Pushitaniqua. Mashika is my Meskwaki name. And I came over here to do the rally. I've been a lifelong member of the Meskwaki tribe in Tama, Iowa. There's a lot of history there as far as our people, you know, being able to live in the state of Iowa as a result of the actions by the Iowa Assembly here. And that enabled the tribe to go ahead and purchase land while they were in the Kansas Reservation, Sacking Fox Reservation over there. They didn't want to live there, didn't like the terrain. If you've ever gone through there, it's got a lot of rocks, you know, there located, and it just wasn't appropriate for our tribe. And as well as a lot of people, some of our tribal members are still in Iowa and who are able to befriend the population in Iowa who petitioned to the state of Iowa for a tribe, the only tribe to remain in the state of Iowa. So once that happened, we purchased the land and our people started moving back from the reservation. And so we own our own land, and to maintain our own identity, to maintain our religion, and to maintain our language and all our cultural ideas that we have. That's why we're in Iowa.
A lot of people have been celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day for a long time. Does having the state issue a proclamation and different cities and the University of Iowa, does that make a difference to you to have these governmental organizations joining in?
Well, it's important to begin somewhere. This is a step, and I don't know if it's the first step, but as we move forward, there'll be other steps, and this is quite a beginning. And moving forward in everyday life, where all people in the state of Iowa working together is another concept of Indigenous Day.
My name is Dominique Badajos. I am Native American. I am from the Meskwaki Nation, and I'm also half Hispanic. I'm the Native American Student Association president. It means everything to me. It means that people know that I'm still here. People know that I won't leave. People know that I have accepted my culture, and I have many more years to learn. But at this point, I am taking those steps to further my education into this process.
When you spoke earlier, you talked about growing up without a real knowledge of your Native American culture. What has it meant to you to explore that part of your own identity?
I've learned who I am. I truly wouldn't be the person I am here without this. My Vice President, Athena Schrock, has helped me tremendously. She is from the same tribe as me, and she has taught me as much as I could learn in a year. But I truly came to the University of Iowa to educate myself into this aspect of who I am, and I don't think anywhere else would have suited me better.
How do you think it's changed how you think about yourself?
I think I am more knowledgeable and more I would say I am just, I don't know how to put it, I'm more me. I came into this, came into the University of Iowa coming from a Newport Beach, California, not like, not a great place for minorities, but at the same part, I never knew who I was, and for this, for me to be me, has never looked better.
My name is Migun, and my English name is Tyler Lashley, and being indigenous to me is honoring your ancestors and carry on what we've been taught, not only how, not only just our culture, but the way we treat each other. And from what I understand, what I've been taught is we treat each other with respect, no matter what race you are, no matter what, whatever decisions you make, that you try to do your best to see the good in people and to respect one another.
Did you grow up on the Meskwaki settlement?
Yes, I've lived on the Meskwaki settlement my whole life, and I grew up there. I did go to the Meskwaki school, and I went to also to the South Tama school, so I've got both educations.
When you were speaking earlier, you mentioned that the city council in Toledo had made a proclamation about Indigenous Peoples Day. You went to Tama schools a little bit, and a lot of people who know the area know that, you know, Tama and Toledo are the communities that are closest to the Meskwaki settlement. And you referred to some tensions there. What does it mean to you to have Indigenous Peoples Day recognized in those communities?
It means a lot to me because, like I said, in the past, you know, it was a lot worse than it is now. With us as people, you know, both the community of Tama and Toledo and the Meskwaki settlement have come a long ways when it comes to relationship with one another. That's how I feel, and it means a lot that Toledo is able to do this, and that means their leadership is opening up, you know, and seeing things differently, a different perspective besides what they've, you know, possibly grew up with, you know. So that's what I'm really excited for and I'm thankful for, because I have children that go to South Tama, and I think about their future, you know. I think about how they're treated while they do go to South Tama, and I've got nothing to report when it comes to how they've been treated, poorly or not. You know, they've been treated very well. So I'm happy about that. I'm happy for that change.
That feels like progress.
Yes, it definitely does feel like progress.
You were performing, singing with a drum today. When did you start doing that as you were growing up and learning about your culture?
If I had to put a number on it, I'd say I was 12 years old. My dad was a singer and a dancer, and so that's something I had admired about him, so it's something that I've always tried to learn myself, but he also taught me also how to sing and how to dance, so I've been singing, you know, since I was around 12 years old.
Sound from the Indigenous Peoples Day celebration at the University of Iowa. It was on Monday, October 14th. And my next guest today is Michael Wambari Gudeska O'Connor. He is a member of the Yaktan Sioux Tribe of South Dakota. He lives in Sioux City, Iowa, and has lived there for about 30 years. He's on the line with me now. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Charity. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. I will have to correct you, though. That is the Yankton Sioux Tribe of South Dakota, and it makes my heart soar like an eagle just to be talking with you this morning.
Well,
so I thank you and all
I'm
the listeners.
So sorry about that, and thank you so much for being here. So, Michael, you grew up in South Dakota. You grew up on a reservation?
Actually, I grew up in Sioux City, but I've certainly lived on the reservation for probably 10 years total.
Okay. And as I mentioned, you've lived in Sioux City now for quite a while. Can you tell us a little bit about the Native community in Sioux City? Because there are many Native people who live there.
Oh, absolutely. Sioux City holds the highest percentage-wise population of Native Americans in the entire state. And the last statistics that I had heard, and this is less than a year old, is there are approximately 29 different tribes that reside here in the Sioux City metro area. Personally, I know people from Native people from all over the country.
And
so,
yeah, Go on.
So Sioux City is literally a melting pot of culture, but not only cultures diverse from, but also cultures in relation to native tribes. A lot of people don't know that there are just so many different tribes across our nation, over 500, as a matter of fact.
And you're on the board of the Urban Native Center in Sioux City. Tell me a little bit about that organization.
Well, it's relatively new. We just became a 501c3. So what we're working on is we're working on bringing back the traditional ways of our people in with a great degree of awareness that Native people have to negotiate. We have to sort of live in two different worlds. We want to hang on to our identity. We want to live the way that our people have always lived. But yet we also have to grow up and we want to be a part of mainstream society as well. We want to shape our children to be able to know who we are as tribal people. But at the same time, acclimate and do very well in mainstream society, non-native society as well. So it can be a very delicate balance between the two.
Now, you mentioned there are people representing 29 different tribes in the Sioux City area. So when you come together at the Urban Native Center, that's people from a lot of different cultures, a lot of different backgrounds, right?
Oh, it's beautiful, but there exist some generalities that cross the division between different tribes. There are some generalities as far as etiquette, and it's just wonderful just to be around each other. So I think we are able to focus more on the commonalities as opposed to the differences among the people. And it's just like a celebration. It just feels wonderful inside.
We're going to take a short break, and Michael will be back to talk a little bit more in a moment. I'm talking with Michael Wambadi Gudeska O'Connor. He's a member of the Yankton Sioux Tribe of South Dakota and lives in Sioux City, Iowa. We're going to talk in a moment about how he spent Indigenous Peoples Day. And coming up in a few minutes, I'll also talk with Shelley Buffalo of the Meskwaki Nation. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Indigenous Peoples Day was observed on Monday of this week, the second Monday of October. And of course, a lot of people grew up celebrating that day as Columbus Day. The idea of Indigenous Peoples Day first came about in 1989 in South Dakota, and it's been catching on over the last decade or so. Last year, Governor Reynolds made a statewide declaration of Indigenous Peoples Day. This year, many other Iowa communities joined in. And right now, I'm talking with Michael Wambadi Gudeska O'Connor. He lives in Sioux City. He's a member of the Yankton Sioux Tribe of South Dakota. And Michael, I mentioned that you have the Urban Native Center in Sioux City. You have a large Native population in Sioux City, but you had to travel to South Dakota to find an observation of Indigenous Peoples Day. Tell me where you went.
Well, I went to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. They were celebrating their second annual Native American Day parade, and so I was fortunate enough to sign up and be a volunteer and be a part of that.
Tell me what it was like.
Oh gosh, are you kidding me? It was wonderful. It's healing for me too as well, because there's just something about no matter who you are, no matter where you come from or who your family is, when you're able to express who you are and where you come from and express that pride, it just helps you.
Do you remember when you first heard of Indigenous Peoples Day?
Oh, you know what? I cannot. And it seems like it's relatively something that has only just recently caught on. Now, Sioux City has yet to recognize. And so that's why I just wanted to go somewhere. I wanted to go to Sioux Falls so I could learn what was happening there and bring it back to my community.
And do you have plans to bring it back to your community in the future?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I've been there very active here, and my next goal would be to take it to our city council for a proclamation vote.
Now, again, there's a large Native community in Sioux City. Relations between Native people and non-Native people in Sioux City have not always been positive. Can you give me a sense of how you feel about what it's like to be Native in Sioux City today?
Well, it's very confusing. It's a sad situation, to be honest with you. And so that's why it's so nice to be a part of something that is so positive. One shocking Sioux City statistic here in Sioux City is that Native Americans make up 2% of our population, but annually we make up 48 to 49% of all alcohol intoxicated related arrests, and this has been annually for the last decade or so. And so that's something that is obviously a crisis situation, and it's very difficult to engage our city leaders in these conversations and to do so in a collaborative effort. But that's something that certainly I place as a priority in my own life, because I'm at that age where it's now my responsibility. You know, a spiritual baton of service exists, and that spiritual baton has been passed down to me, and I've accepted that. And so I work really hard, and we're having a meeting tonight to sort of strategize future meetings with our community leaders, because the Native community needs to be heard. Everybody knows that there's a problem with us here. We're high rate of homelessness, shocking rates of poverty, arrests, suicide, and homelessness. And it's all something that it doesn't escape anybody. You just drive through downtown Sioux City and you find out real fast. And the fact that Sioux City has not yet recognized Native American Day as opposed to Columbus Day, I think is a signal to that. And so Sioux City really needs to wake up and be progressive like a lot of our communities have.
And you've been trying to get involved in local government, right?
Oh, absolutely. I just ran for city council just recently. We had the vote last Tuesday. Out of five, I came in third, but I'll tell you what, it only strengthened my resolve, because there is a serious crisis situation that not only affects the Native American community, but affects all of us as taxpaying citizens and as Iowans who care about each other.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Michael Wambari Gudeska O'Connor, he's a member of the Yankton Sioux Tribe of South Dakota and lives in Sioux City, Iowa. We're talking about Indigenous Peoples Day. It was observed on Monday, and back in 2018, last year, Governor Reynolds made a statewide declaration. This year, many communities around Iowa joined in with their own declarations. With me next is Shelley Buffalo. She's the Food Sovereignty Coordinator for the Meskwaki Nation, and she grew up mostly on the Meskwaki settlement near Tama. Hello, Shelley.
Hello.
Thank you for being here. And as I just said, I mean, the idea of Indigenous Peoples Day has only been around since 1989. It's only really been catching on in the last decade, maybe even in the last 5 years, there's really been a movement. Do you remember when you first heard about it?
No, I don't. To be quite honest, I don't remember when I first heard about it. It's something that's been on the periphery and kind of slowly trickling in. And what's great is that this year it was formalized by the Tama Toledo city leaders working with the Meskwaki tribe.
And the city leaders in Tama and Toledo made their proclamation. Were you surprised when that happened?
Well, I have to say that Darvin Graham, mayor of Toledo, who he did work for the tribe in our media department. I'm not surprised now, because you know, he worked with the tribal community to spearhead that campaign. But I'm delighted.
So I mentioned you grew up on the Meskwaki settlement, and of course, Tama and Toledo are very close to the settlement. These are the communities that a lot of Meskwaki people spend a lot of time in, go to the schools in. I was just talking to Michael about what the relationship is like between the Native people in Sioux City and the non-Native community there. Take us back to your childhood growing up. What did you feel your relationship was with the non-Native communities surrounding the settlement?
Well, I have a unique perspective because I attended kindergarten through second grade at Garwin School, which is a small community just about 7 miles north of Meskwaki settlement. And I had never experienced any racism. I always felt complete acceptance. And I really, my father is Meskwaki and my mother white, but even back then in the early 70s, I didn't feel any pressure from the community that caused me to believe that we weren't accepted. The big change was when my parents divorced. I attended schools in Cedar Falls for 1 year, and I still didn't really experience any racism. I just experienced poverty, as often happens after divorce. And so that was the big change. And then it was fourth grade when I came to the Tama County School District, and that was a huge shock for me, because that was the first time that I experienced racism. And in particular, what happened with my teacher is that I just noticed, well, one of the things I noticed about the other Meskwaki kids in South Tama schools is that they were very quiet. They didn't speak up in class. They were just kind of and very much kept to themselves. This isn't exclusively, but, you know, it was a shift for me. Especially in the classroom, very, very quiet, kind of little withdrawn, not participating. And I participated, you know, I raised my hand and I spoke up and I giggled. You know, I was a little fourth grader, and I noticed that I was constantly getting in trouble for the slightest things. And to the point where my teacher wouldn't allow me to go use the bathroom. I'd raise my hand and ask permission, and she said, no, you're just going to go, or I guess I'm trying to remember. She said, you don't have to use the bathroom. You're just using it as an excuse to dig in other people's lockers. And I actually ended up hospitalized that year with impacted bowels. Because of that, I think in part because of just the stress,
right,
of being put in that situation and confused. Like I couldn't figure out what I was doing wrong.
Right. Wow. So do you feel like you have lived a number of different places over the years, and you're living on the Meskwaki settlement again? Do you feel like a lot of progress has been made?
A huge amount of progress has been made. You know, the Tama Toledo community, it's changed. One of the things that led the change is actually in 1993, the Meskwaki tribe opened their casino. And the casino became the largest employer in the county. Even people from Marshall County and then County South, you know, surrounding counties have come to the casino for employment. People who personally, like, you know, I knew people who used to get in fights. There used to be fights downtown between Natives and whites, and the people, you know, that used to get in fights with the Indians came to work for the casino. And it's, you know, that really changed things. That really changed things a lot.
Changed the power dynamic in the community.
Absolutely. Yeah,
but it changed. I know it changed so much for the Meskwaki people, too, to have that kind of source for income and employment.
Yes, it did. It did a lot to alleviate poverty and housing issues.
So last year, when Governor Reynolds signed the Indigenous Peoples Day proclamation in Iowa, do you remember finding out about that?
I found about about it on Facebook, which I hate to admit because I kind of I don't do Facebook much anymore. It's such a mixed bag. And but I did. I found out about it on that. That's where I got my news. No, it should be Iowa Public Radio is where I get all of my news.
We're not here to judge. But when I first heard about Indigenous Peoples Day, maybe 10 years ago, I thought that's a great idea. But I also honestly was skeptical. I didn't think that it would catch on. Did you have a similar skepticism about the idea that this could possibly eventually replace the celebration of Columbus Day?
Oh, I absolutely did. I absolutely did. I was born in 1967. So just to put things in perspective, within my lifetime, there has been great changes. In 1978 was the year that both ICWA, which is the Indian Child Welfare Act, as well as I think it's called NARF, NARFA, it's the Native American Religious Freedom Act. That's 1978. Prior to that, practice of many Native American ceremonies and religion was prohibited by law. And as well as with the Indian Child Welfare Act, prior to that, the percentages of Native children that were removed from their communities was 25% to 35%. And it was only in 1962 when Native Americans won the right to vote in all states. So, just a few years before I was born.
Right.
So this was, this was something that, this type of recognition and freedoms in a country that was supposed to guarantee freedom for all, it was finally coming into fruition. So replacing Columbus Day, something that is, for one thing, is based on a myth. You know, much of what's taught about Columbus in popular culture just isn't true. But it was, I think the word, codified into American society and held up as this wonderful thing, and still is amongst certain groups. They still believe in the myth that Columbus brought democracy, and that's insane, But it's what's beautiful is it's like this wave, that's just keeps gaining strength, and instead of it's washing away that ignorance.
Was Indigenous Peoples Day marked on the settlement this year? Did you have a celebration?
Well, the main celebration was the signing ceremony in the evening of Indigenous Peoples Day. I celebrated it by working all day, but the work that I do is wonderful and meaningful to me. So I was happy to celebrate it that way.
Well, since you brought up Facebook, I will bring up Facebook. And in some ways, Indigenous Peoples Day has become a little bit of a Hallmark holiday. Or, people share the memes on Facebook. This is something that a lot of people will feel like they're doing something important by sharing a picture or a meme about Indigenous Peoples Day. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are seeing that, even if they're not going to celebrations or commemorations. But a lot of people aren't thinking about it very hard, probably. What do you want people to think about when they see those memes go by, when people talk about Indigenous Peoples Day? What do you want just the average person to think about?
Well, I would like people to ask why. For instance, why not Columbus Day? What is it about the celebration of that that's wrong in the, hearts and minds of Indigenous people? Like, why? There's also the memes that are very misleading that, are making the case for Columbus Day. And it's like also those memes, people just kind of, they see it and then they share it. And it's very superficial.
Yeah.
And I just ask people, dig deeper, dig deeper so that
I get the sense from you that this feels important. This feels special to you, that this does seem to be catching on.
Oh, absolutely. Like, and so Sioux City, you know, we're we're going to do some work with you, Sioux City. Definitely. That's I have hope that we can get Sioux City on board, too.
And, of course, talking to Michael, clearly there's a great deal of work to be done everywhere.
Yes,
for
there
Native
is.
People.
Yes, a lot of healing.
Well, Shelley Buffalo, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Shelley Buffalo is the Food Sovereignty Coordinator for the Meskwaki Nation. And we've been talking about Indigenous Peoples Day, which was on Monday of this week. Coming up in just a moment, I'll talk with Keisho Scott of Grinnell College about her recent trip to Ghana. This is the year of return in Ghana, an opportunity for those descended from enslaved people from Africa to return to the land of their ancestors. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.